Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tea Party, meet Occupy Wall Street. Will the new progressive protest movement grow into something as big or influential as the Tea Party has on the right? We have more evidence this morning that it might, as a big conference of sort of mainstream progressive pals and activists kicked off in D.C. a few minutes ago, if they were on schedule, with a newly added opening, speeches from the Occupy Wall Street gathering in Lower Manhattan. So let's talk about that and more with New York Magazine political columnist John Heilman, co-author of the book Game Change about the 2008 presidential campaign. John's piece in the New York Magazine just out today is about Chris Christie mania. Hi, John. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey Brian. Good to hear you this morning.
And Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Hi, Susan.
Hey, Brian.
So, Susan, interesting times with Christie rising on the right and Occupy Wall Street rising on the left. Let's talk about the movement first. First, this conference. What is Take Back the American Dream, the conference, and how significant is it that Occupy was added in some kind of featured role?
Well, Take Back the American Dream is a conference that's being was organized by some progressive groups, including the AFL-CIO and Robert Boris Age's group and some others.
Robert Reich is speaking. So this is pretty mainstream liberal stuff.
People we are accustomed to seeing in Washington. Now, these people who are demonstrating near Wall Street are not people we often, I think, see at the conferences at the Washington Hilton here in Washington. So I think it is significant that they've been invited and a sign that progressives are trying to get some of the energy that launched the Tea Party movement. Remember, the Tea Party movement did not start out as a very organized group. It started out with some people who were mad and showed up at congressional meetings, and suddenly a movement was born, and I think people on the left hope something similar will now happen.
And, John, there are always anti-capitalist protests on Wall Street. The idea here is that this may really be something with a more mainstream appeal or a different message than the perennial small gathering of Marxists and anarchists might bring. There were offshoot protests in a whole bunch of cities, large and small, over the last few days, even Birmingham, Alabama, from what I've heard, not your basic hotbed of progressive street demonstrations.
Right. And, you know, I think it's interesting, Brian, because it's not unlike the very much more easily marginalizable movements that actually cling to ideologies like, you know, anarchism, like they're anarchists or they're Marxists or whatever. Those are, I think, more easily dismissed. This actually feels like it has, because it has less of a coherent ideology, in some ways has the possibility of getting more traction, because you have basically a hodgepodge of people who are on the left in a general sense. They have no specific demand so far. That's both a weakness and a strength, because the strength means that it can bring a lot of people together who are essentially expressing a pretty deep and well-justified frustration with the fact that the financial system is screwed up, and it has helped screw up our economy, and they feel as though there has been no effective response to that on the part of the representatives that they would have thought would have been on their side, i.e. the Obama administration and Democrats in Congress. And so you've got this kind of free-floating frustration, anxiety, anger that's now, as it started to gain in numbers, it's starting to spread. And because of the fact that it's so diffuse, it actually gives it more potential, I think, for becoming a bigger thing.
As for a specific agenda, not yet being released, after you guys, we'll have a guest who's involved with or close to the movement, and we'll find out more about what they might want. It was interesting to see Nicholas Kristof had a column yesterday suggesting specific agenda items that they might start attaching themselves to, about the capital gains tax and this and that.
Right.
They did hand out, whoever they are, which is going to be one of my next questions, at the Wall Street protest over the weekend, what's called it? I'm opening it and bumping it into my microphone. A big 4-page broadsheet style newspaper called the Occupied Wall Street Journal. For Occupied Wall Street, right? The Occupied Wall Street Journal.
Well, I definitely want a copy of that.
Well, I think we only have one, but we can fax it to you or something. The revolution begins at home. Wall Street protests enter third week is the front page headline. But then inside, there is what they call the Declaration of the Occupation. So approved by consensus, it says, On September 29th, 2011, that was Thursday, at the New York City General Assembly in occupied Liberty Square. And it's written in the style of the Declaration of Independence. So, for example, quote, "They have taken our houses through an illegal foreclosure process, despite not having the original mortgage. They have taken bailouts from taxpayers with impunity and continue to give executives exorbitant bonuses. They have poisoned the food supply through negligence and undermined the farming system through monopolization. They have perpetuated inequality and discrimination in the workplace," etc. And then it gets to the end. "So to the people of the world, we, the New York City General Assembly, occupying Wall Street in Liberty Square, urge you to assert your power. Exercise your right to peaceably assemble. Occupy public space. Create a process to address the problems we face and generate solutions accessible to everyone." And for people interested, we were working on a link. Did we get the link up to this? I think we have on our webpage that declaration of the occupation for people who want to see it. Is it clear to you who the leaders are and that that language represents something central?
You know, it is not clear to me who the leaders are, and I think these are protests that started kind of small, did not get a lot of media attention, but this morning you see a story about them in, of all places, the actual Wall Street Journal. So they're beginning to get some attention. I think it's, you know, John, of course, is right that it's easier to attract people to a movement that doesn't have a very strict ideology that will repel some people and attract some others. I do think when you go to sort of this revolutionary language in a declaration like that, that you risk losing some of the mainstream appeal that you hope to have. On the other hand, you look at the issues they're listing. I mean, who is not concerned about
the mortgage crisis? What was revolutionary about citing, you know, the foreclosure process despite not having the original mortgage, poison the food supply through negligence? Maybe that's a little more, you know, strong language. And what are they asking people to do? Exercise your right to peaceably assemble, occupy public space, create a process to address the problems. I mean, that's not, you know, take to the hills and become gorillas.
Well, that's true. You sort of point out some things. Home foreclosures, there is no one in America who does not think that's a problem. Paying taxpayer-paid bailouts and then bankers get big bonuses, that angers everybody except maybe the bankers involved. But poison the food supply, I don't know exactly what that means. I think that a lot of Americans look at it and say, I don't know what that means. That sounds a little far.
Well, they'll talk about pesticides and hormones and everything. I don't know. John, you want to get in on this?
Well, there's a slightly conspiratorial tone. I wouldn't say it's revolutionary. It's more there's a conspiratorial tone in some of that language. But look, those complaints are all rooted in realities, and Susan was just pointing out, they're rooted in realities that people who might not be inclined to speak of them with quite that degree of alacrity. But people generally feel as though in all those areas, there's a lot of people in America who think that in all those areas something is wrong. And when you think about, Brian, your initial analogy to the Tea Party, I mean, you know, the Tea Party used some pretty harsh language in the summer of 2009. It talked about death panels. It talked about, you know, when it was germinating out in the country, there was some extreme language, and there still is some extreme language on that side. And yet that movement, without a leader to this day, there is no one who's the chairman of the Tea Party. There's no one who's the president of the Tea Party.
Right.
That movement, within a year in 2010, became a seminal force on the Republican side in terms of the congressional elections in 2010. And in a lot of ways became a seminal force in our politics. So none of the things that we pointed out here, they're all true, but none of them, it seemed to me, are reasons to think that this movement couldn't. I'm not saying it will, but those are not reasons to think this movement can't have some kind of significant effect, especially on progressive politics.
John Holland from New York Magazine and the book Game Change, Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. And our phones are open. As I said, we're going to go to a next guest on this in a little while who's close to the movement. So, listeners, if you're in it, if you were at the Brooklyn Bridge, call us up. Take some airtime, 212-433-WNYC. If you're just anybody listening who wants to comment on the new movement as you're consuming it in the media or whatever, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or head over to our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and keep that comments page active. John, what do you think of the name, Occupy Wall Street? I mean, Tea Party has that classical American heritage appeal. Occupy Wall Street does sound more aggressive and outsidery. Does it matter? Does the name itself risk a backlash or anything?
I don't know. You know, Brian, I mean, it's kind of interesting you think about it. I mean, to me, it is very redolent of the 60s. And you think about, I mean, again, the thing that that brings to my mind is the new left and occupying university buildings and occupying ROTC barracks on college campuses across the country. There's a spirit of that. And you've actually seen people invoking, you know, the whole world is watching, you know, that same, that those kind of taglines that are the last time there was really a significant and resonant protest movement. Now, obviously, this movement is nowhere near the scale or importance of either the civil rights movement or the anti-war movement in the 60s yet, but you can see that there's that element that they're trying to key into. The other thing that I think is so interesting about this is that it is Wall Street, right? And there's a in the same way that the Tea Party is driven very much as an anti-government, it's trying to be redolent of an insurrection against the unwarranted power of the state. You have here the direction is at the financial system, and that is, I think, again, both to some extent even on the right, but certainly on the left, Wall Street is very much the locus of what is still wrong with the American economy. And I think if this group starts to become a little more nuanced, they will start to make arguments about the nexus between Wall Street money and our politics. And that is where I think, again, there's a real base of concern in the country around that. Whether this group's capable of capitalizing on it and speaking to it effectively, I don't know. But there are a lot of people across a lot of the ideological spectrum that feel as though that nexus is at the core of what's wrong with America right now.
Tori in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tori. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was just calling. I am arguably part of this generation, riddled with student debt, have a master's in urban planning. And I just look at this organization and I'm like, and your speaker just was very valid in the idea that if there was this underpinning of specifically attacking the financial issues in our country, that would be fantastic. And like, if there was a directive or a goal that was clear to me, I would feel more interested in what was going on here. But basically, I feel like there hasn't been bulleted ideological points that they're trying to accomplish. And so basically, I'm like, why aren't you working? Because the only way that we are going to be able to get anywhere is if we do it the right way, you know, if we use proper channels. Like, and without having a clear idea of what we're trying to accomplish, we can't really get anything done.
Yeah. Now, what about the student loan agenda? Maybe you've heard some of this coverage, and that's why you brought it up, that one of their agenda items is, and forgive me, I'm not exactly clear on how specifically to put this, it may be to forgive all student debt, which of course would be a blanket statement, but on the basis that, like with the home mortgages, there's been a lot of bundling of student debt, securitization of student debt, that led banks to just try to push a lot of student loans on families around America, despite whether it was good for them financially, like some of the subprime mortgage loans and stuff like that, because then the bank could immediately bundle and sell off the debt and not take the risk on it. So does that stir your heart? I mean, is that a specific agenda item that you can get behind?
Well, first of all, I think the interesting thing about privatized loans is that they won't consolidate them. They won't lower your so even though a same company can hold three of my loans, they won't lower the price point and they won't consolidate. And they're like the mafia student loans. But I think that the idea, it sounds very like apocalyptic and Fight Club, like the idea that there would be some sort of like, oh, it's okay, guys, you all got that education. Yeah. I mean, they can't foreclose on my education.
Right.
I'll pay for it sometime. It would be nice if the moral practices were a little better.
You're taking that on even when you call your bank the mafia. Tori, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Magda in Westchester. Hi, Magda, you're on WNYC. You were on the bridge?
Yes, I was. Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
Thank you. Tell us about it.
Well, it was really strange because I wasn't at the beginning of the march. I was somewhat in the middle, closer to the end. And the police was alongside the march at all times. They made sure that we were on the sidewalk. Upon entering the bridge, nobody told us not to go on the bridge. We thought that there was a permit that was given to the protesters, and the traffic was proceeding on the sidewalk, on the side, and everything was peaceful. And all of a sudden, we were stopped. And I stepped on the beam and looked around, and police just surrounded everybody and started arresting people despite the fact that we didn't do anything. Nobody was in any way violent. So I just wanted to share that. I was able to get out of the bridge without being arrested, but it was just really traumatic experience.
Thank you for your call. And tomorrow we'll be looking more at the police angle and on what basis, how many people were arrested over the weekend, and, you know, who knows when more arrests will take place. John Heilman, I know it's early, but can this new movement affect the 2012 elections like the Tea Party had an impact in 2012? I would think it's setting up to be good for Obama, good for the Democrats in Congress, because it mobilizes the base, unless they cause an even bigger backlash.
Yes, I think that's probably right. I mean, I think there's time, certainly, Brian, and the timing, you know, is actually roughly analogous to the Tea Party in the sense that, you know, it was the summer of 2009 when the Tea Party first made its presence felt, and it's now, you know, we're had an early fall now, obviously, but it's and you think about the context of a presidential year election, there's so much more involvement and there's so much higher turnout in a presidential year that you can move on an accelerated scale if this group, again, it begins to have a little bit more infrastructure and a little bit more of an objective and a little bit more of a sense of purpose. I mean, what happened around the Tea Party, of course, was that you had something spontaneous, but then a number of different groups rose up and started to, on a local level and then on a national level, started to kind of channel that into a more. I'm not saying this in an approving way, but in a more concrete way, not necessarily productive, but a more concrete way than it had been before. So, if that starts to happen around this group, I think, you know, you could imagine. Again, I'm not predicting, but you could imagine that this could be a locus for a lot of progressive energy headed into the 12 elections, both on the presidential scale and on the congressional one.
Susan, do they have any champions in Congress yet other than Bernie Sanders? And how do you foresee this? I guess it's premature to ask this question, but, you know, Republican congressional candidates, depending on their district, either fully embrace the Tea Party or kind of tiptoe around the Tea Party. Do we see any members of Congress yet saying, hey, you go, Occupy Wall Street, you know, and this becoming a rallying cry at the congressional race level?
You know, I haven't seen officials here embrace the Occupy Wall Street movement, but there are several congressmen who are addressing the Take Back the American Dream conference here. Donna Edwards from Maryland, and some others I know are on the agenda there. And you know, it does have the potential to help Democrats with one of their big problems looking at 2012, which is a lack of enthusiasm on the part of the left. We know from the Gallup poll that Democratic enthusiasm is now the lowest it's been about voting next year. It's the lowest it's been since 2004, and Republican enthusiasm is significantly higher. And boy, that is a big advantage when you're trying to turn out people to vote in an election.
So this could help Democratic enthusiasm, even if there doesn't quickly materialize an Occupy Wall Street caucus in Congress like there's a Tea Party caucus. Before we run out of time, I do just want to get, John, to your New York Magazine article on Chris Christie today. And obviously we talked on this show last week about Christie's Reagan Library speech invoking compromise and divided government and praise for the New Jersey Democratic leaders. Here is a short clip to remind us.
Here's what we did. We identified the problems. We proposed specific means to fix them. We educated the public on the dire consequences of inaction. And then we compromised on a bipartisan basis to get results. In other words, we did what government is supposed to do. We took action.
Bipartisan compromise. John, can that kind of language work in Republican primaries?
Well, you know, the thing that if that language was not twinned to Chris Christie's degree of bluster and brusqueness and bluntness and his what some on the left would call bullying, if it weren't attached to those things, it would be a problem, because he would sound like kind of a weasel worded kind of mealy mouth centrist. But because Christie is who he is, and because so much of the appeal that he has to a lot of people comes in this forceful personality. Who, when he says compromise, what he means is, I beat the hell out of the Democratic legislature and they gave in to most of my demands. That sounds a lot more appealing to people in the Republican Party than the kind of compromise that, say, someone like John Huntsman is putting forward.
That's code, and so we'll find out if he actually gets into the race. But just real quick, either of you, What do you think Christie's political weaknesses would be in the Republican primary season? All these Republicans are saying, oh, he's going to get in, he's going to be so strong. They were saying that about Rick Perry a month and a half ago. Imagine you are Rick Perry or Mitt Romney or their Oppo research guys. What 500-pound artillery shell are you getting ready to unleash on the 300-pound governor, Susan?
You know, Chris Christie reminds me a lot of Rudy Giuliani, who was, of course, leading in the Republican polls at this point in the process 4 years ago, but was a disastrous candidate because he has positions that work well when you're in New York and New Jersey, but don't do you any good when you go to the base of the Republican Party in the South and elsewhere. You know, his positions on gun control, on climate change. We've seen the kind of trouble Rick Perry's gotten into for a Texas, but very acceptable position he takes in Texas on immigration. It is almost disqualifying for him in these primaries, and I think Chris Christie could face a very similar process.
John, 20 seconds.
Totally agree with Susan. I think the other thing is, the other side of the Rick Perry coin is just that we have no idea. Rick Perry's brand of his personality-based politics works very well for a governor, but as Rick Perry has found out, when you get on the national stage and the hot lights are on you and the scrutiny is so much tougher, the mistakes you make get amplified a lot, you know, to a much greater degree, and you could see a lot of problems for him on a performance level, too.
John Heilman has an article about Christie today in New York Magazine. Susan Page is the Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thank you both so much.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
And our next guest is going to be Nathan Schneider, editor of the site Waging Nonviolence. He's been both covering and participating in the Occupy Wall Street protests. And as we go to a break before Nathan Schneider, we'll listen to a little bit of ambient sound from the Brooklyn Bridge protest. And if you can listen carefully, you'll hear the police, somebody from the police, warn the protesters that if they move onto the actual roadway, they will be arrested.
This roadway, now, if you do so voluntarily, no charges will be placed against you. If you refuse to leave, you'll be placed under arrest and charged with disorderly conduct.